Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I thought I'd talk about the triple lock pensions, because that seems to be a bit of an issue at the moment. Well, it was really a bit of an issue a week ago when Reform came out and announced that they were going to safeguard the triple lock, which was always meant to be a very temporary measure. It was supposed to be a short-run measure that lasted for a couple of years in order to adjust a perceived deficit in pensions. But the problem is once you introduce something, it becomes nigh on politically impossible to ever get rid of it, and thus you go up the ratchet, which is a little bit unfortunate. So we'll be talking about triple lock pension, why it is quite mental, and it's kind of incontrovertible when you get into it, because basically it will end up swallowing everything if the NHS doesn't get there first. The NHS and the triple lock pensions will basically be like, was it Godzilla and the other one? Moth Mazar. Whoever it is that Godzilla fights, is going to be them two competing to take over every fibre of our being in this country. And I mean, our pension system is not wildly different, really, at the end of the day, to any other G7 country. So even if you're not English, you can probably watch this one, because you can see the folly of making any government line item something that cannot be touched when it's this generous. So let's start off with a bit of background on UK pensions. I think they were introduced by Lloyd George in 1908. It was introduced for people over the age of 70, and life expectancy at the time was 50. So you had to be 20 years over the average life expectancy in order to get any pension. And it was about 15% of a working man's wage back then. And it was also means tested. So if you were wealthy enough, you didn't get it. Now, back then, and I always remember this from my history classes at school, the old people who got it, the tiny number of old people who actually got it, were so grateful, because they were both poor and old. They were so grateful they'd make like little cakes and stuff and take them to the people at the post office where they got their pension, and they're just enormously grateful for it. It's become an entitlement at this point, and people just think, well, because I paid into the system to pay for somebody else's pension, I'm therefore entitled to my pension when it comes, and it should be as generous as possible. In fact, I should be able to maintain a standard of living which is more or less comparable to my working days with it. Which was never the original intention of the thing. The particular issue comes with this triple lock pension thing. So what triple lock actually means is that it will always rise by either CPI, so inflation basically. It rises by average earnings growth, or if none of those are higher than 2.5%, it goes up by 2.5%. So it's not smoothing across time. It's looking for the maximum out of any three of those variables, and then it's picking that one. So you've got this sort of eternal upwards ratchet. Now, it was introduced in the triple lock in its current form, is introduced in 2010. Under, I think there was a coalition. Yes, it would have been. It would have been the coalition government with the Lib Dems and the Tories. And the situation they're looking at there is the pension level had fallen relative to earnings for most of the last decade. And so they wanted to do something for pensioners. They thought, okay, fair enough. But, you know, these people, they vote. In 2010, you would have had the baby boomers, a number of them, already retired, but certainly the bulk of them on the verge of retirement before the next parliament of 5 years. And so it was a quite nice, easy way to get some extra votes. And the logic at the time was, well, you know, we're going to re-anchor it to earnings, but we're also going to protect against inflation. And we're also going to guarantee that you get at least something if workers don't get anything and we don't print enough money that year. So, enormously successful politics. The older folk, of course, voted for that. And well, let's track how it did. Before I do, let's have a look at link one. I've got. Let me see if I can call up a link. Here we go. Link one. Hopefully, my editor can show that to you as well. The slightly galling thing about it is that a lot of people are defending it now on social media and in newspaper articles and the rest, saying, well, look, you know, this is an entitlement. You know, we should get this. And the reason the baby boomer generation gets a bit of stick on this is because the baby boomer generation was so large, they have always gotten their way whenever they have been, of whatever age they are. Policy has adapted to benefit that generation because it was so large, it had so much voting power. And actually, if you go back to the 80s, what does this say? So in the 80s, pre-80s, pensions were generally linked to growth in average earnings. Okay, fine. And then when the baby boomers really came into their own, when their propensity to vote had gone up enough, and plus their generation size, that they were dominant, the Thatcher government broke the earnings link and switched to price indexation, which is actually fairly sensible back then, because there was inflation, but they weren't wildly printing money back then. And what does it say? 1980 to 2010, pensions were uprated in line with price inflation only. As earnings generally grew faster than prices, this caused the state pension to decline from roughly 26% of average earnings to 16%. And that's when the pension triple lot came in, just as that baby boomer generation were reaching their retirement point. So that does get a few people slightly annoyed, because the baby boomer generation, they took away, when they were in voting ascendancy, they took it away from, well, they weakened the mechanism when they were the politically dominant bloc. And when they got old, they then brought it back with spades and triple locked it and concreted it and nailed it down with golden nails, which is possibly a little bit off. Pensions are now, in terms of the earning link, they're 14% higher than they were when the triple lock was brought in, or £1,300 per year is how much they're higher. And you know, the recent uprating, and I think I've got a link that I can show you. But what you've had since then is you've had periods of inflation spikes where the real wages of workers has gone down, because of course if prices go up and your wages don't, then the your real pay has effectively decreased. So when we've had inflation spikes, workers have got poorer. But because the triple lock is earnings linked, inflation linked as well as earnings linked, the pensions, they get the benefit on both sides. So they go up by whatever the inflation rate was. So they don't really see that. And then what happens after an inflation spike is that the employees then catch up, often not quite as much. And then so they go up, and that sort of makes them all right a little bit for the inflation that's happened, even though they've lost out several years and wages never normally catch up to the level of inflation. But the pensions benefit twice. So they completely absorb the inflation spike, and then they get the earnings spike as well. So they kind of double dip on that. And then if you have a period of low inflation and, you know, wage compression, well, they still go up 2.5% anyway, which is, you know, quite a good pay rise for a perfectly normal year. So the it's been adding. What has it added? It's added about 12 billion to the pension bill, indexed. So inflation adjusted, is added 12 billion against where it was, and it's probably going to go up by another 4 billion by 2030 in terms of cost. So you know, that's 0.5% of GDP that the pension bill has gone up. And I'm not even taking into account the bloody demographics there, which is the baby boomer generation is aging out and they didn't have enough kids. They should have all had, if they wanted to have a pension like this, they should have all had 3 or 4 kids minimum. But they didn't. We just aborted a load of people instead. And now they're going to get old and they're going to want it as well. So that is a bit unfortunate. Now, I mean, what's so great about the pension triple lock from the benefit of retirees, you've got two volatile series and then a save. Inflation, as we have seen, can be volatile, and then of course if inflation is going to be volatile, well, the earnings are going to be volatile, and then you're going to get an increase anyway. So if you've got two volatile indexes and you always get the better of them, or 2.5%, I cannot tell you what I would give as an investor to have that. If I could have in my portfolio a system where I could pick, say, I don't know, Bitcoin and something that didn't correlate well with it. Well, I mean, everything correlates. The correlation of everything is going to one at the moment. But I don't know, let's imagine that gold miners, for example, gold miners they are volatile stocks, and they didn't correlate well with Bitcoin. Then I could have, if Bitcoin goes up, I get that. If gold miners go up, I get that. And if both of those are down heavily, will I get 2.5%? I mean that is enormous. I mean that is hugely beneficial. In fact, let me pull up the attachment thing that I wanted to show you. Oh yeah, here we go. So yes, look at that. That is, what's it showing? So inflation is the green line, earnings is the black line, and yeah, you can see what I mean here. So, and you've got a line across the middle. So when both of those are below, you get the 2.5%. If you are the worker, you get the black line minus the green line. So actually, you've probably, I mean, if you net those out, I mean, I'd need a computer to do that, but you're probably going to be a flat line that just declined slightly down here. You know, actually be below the zero line, wouldn't it? You'd probably have a line that just goes, you know, I don't know if you can see my mouse, but just goes down at like a 10% angle below the line. Whereas from a pensioner's point of view, well, look, if the green line is high, we'll take that. If the black line goes over, as it does here, when it catches up, okay, we'll take that. Anyway, it's just a massive win. So you can see why the pension costs are soaring up by billions at a time when we don't have billions. So, you know, it's effectively double dipping on the same economic factors. Because whatever leads you to drive up inflation, well, almost certainly with a 12 to 18 month lag, earnings are then going to have a catch up period after it. In fact, this chart shows that, doesn't it? Shows that with the COVID era, yeah. So inflation started to spike. There was a catch up with wages, and then wages dropped off because everybody got a pay cut. Then inflation surged again, and then fell off sharply. But then you got the pay increase to reflect the inflation that had previously come. I mean, wonderful system if you can get it. The problem is we can't afford it. So, you know, it and ultimately what this is, right, is a transfer. It's a, you know, it's a political mechanism to shift wealth from one group of people to another. In this case, you know, from young people to old people. But how else could you describe those two groups and be accurate, you know, not at every level? I'm sure there's some pensioners that are living in poverty and some 22-year-old footballer who's earning millions. But certainly at the median level, what you're doing is you are transferring money from poor people to rich people. And that's probably not really on. And it's happening because the old people, there's both a lot of them, and they turn out and vote. So, yes, not ideal. You know, pensioners, they are the most reliable voting bloc, particularly the baby boomers, because if you are a baby boomer, whatever the mass of your generation has wanted, you have always got throughout your entire life. You know, policies were catered more towards the young when you were young, and now policy is very much catered towards the old now that you are old. From your point of view, voting works. You know, you might not have got exactly what you wanted, but at the median level for your generation, they have always got exactly what they wanted. So not only are there a lot of you, but your propensity to vote is high. And so, you know, parties have repeatedly committed to this. So it was the coalition, then it was just the Tories. They kept on committing to it. Then it was Labour. You know, they keep committing to it. Reform have just committed to it. But every Treasury model shows, even the ones at the beginning, that it is unsustainable. The first Treasury projection on the triple lock showed that it was unsustainable. And the line at the time is, well, we just do it for 2 or 3 years to catch things up, and then of course we get rid of it. But then an election comes along and they say, okay, well, we won't do it this parliament, but we'll do it the next parliament. So 4 to 5 years go by, And then they try to get elected again. Of course they do it again. And Reform are doing this now. They're doing it again. It's a trap. You can't get out of it. It's the you know, classic median voter with asymmetric turnout trap. So what are you going to do? I did find another. Can we have link three? So here we go. So link Desmond Swain has decided to pick this one up. He is a very boomery boomer, being born in 1956. I mean, that is peak boomer. That is. He is the one other MP than Rupert Lowe that I actually like, Desmond Swain. He's good. He's still a Tory. He should go and join Rupert Lowe, shouldn't he? As soon as Rupert's Lowe thing, you know, gets some legs, Desmond Swain should go over. He's great. He was very strong against the COVID nonsense as well. So I like Desmond, and he picked up the issue here, and he's saying, look. I am fortunate that I was born in 1956. Lucky me. The Centre for Policy Studies calculate that the average person born in that year in their lifetime will secure from the benefit system just shy of £300,000 more than they ever paid in taxes. This largesse is unsustainable by the benefit system. One significant component of the state pension, with its increasingly expensive triple lock, of course. Maybe pensioners will be surprised, and I'd imagine he goes on to say that they were never funding their own pensions. He's almost certainly going to say that they were simply paying out for the pensioners that were pensioners when they were in working age. The problem is that the generations that preceded the baby boomers were small generations. I mean, the only reason why the baby boom happened in the first place is because, for whatever reason, having a world war makes everybody incredibly randy, and they all came back and had like 5 or 6 kids. Not exactly sure how that works. I think Ed Dutton has tried to explain it to me. There's some sort of evolutionary thing where when everything's falling apart, you're like, oh, goody, let's have kids. But anyway, so that's how that works. But yeah, as what does he say there? £300,000is the transfer from young people to old people over the course of the lifetime of a baby boomer not born in 1956. And this has been a generation that was able to get housing at a reasonable rate. As they are fond of reminding us, you know, they didn't have it easy. You know, they had to do an extra paper round or something for a couple of weeks in order to get the deposit for their first house. And, you know, they had to eat baked beans for the first couple of weeks because they just bought a house. And, you know, they didn't have foreign holidays. They didn't have Netflix. They didn't go to Bali for raves and stuff like that. So they sacrificed an awful lot. But they did get a 4 or 5-bed house in Surrey with a massive garden and a huge driveway. So, you know, swings and roundabouts, I suppose. But anyway, so yeah, the boomers will tell you they're very hard done by. But as Desmond there had pointed out, well, they're getting £300,000 transfer from the state, and that is coming from somebody, from somewhere. Where is it coming from? It's coming from everybody who isn't a boomer, predominantly at this point the young. Because most of the largesse that you will get over your lifetime in our system is going to be the pensions and NHS, because the NHS is overwhelmingly. I mean, I know the NHS does see younger people. It does the handful of births that we still have in this country, and if you get one over when you're 22, you know it will do something for you there. But overwhelmingly, the NHS is a elderly care service. It's a pensioner care service ultimately, and of course that's pensions as well. We've got something which is going to break. I mean, it kind of has to, because pension spending is already 140 billion annually, and it is crowding out things like defence. And so we have to upset Mr. Trump because he wants us to spend more on defence, and we can't because we've got boomers instead. I mean, they've got them as well, but nothing stops the Americans spending money on blowing people up. They quite like that. It's crowding out capital investment. It's crowding out, you know, young cohort spending of whatever that would look like. You can imagine that if the millennials were a proper, let's say the baby boomers had all had 5 or 6 kids like their parents did, the millennials would be I mean, they'd just be voting themselves free childcare, help getting a first house, help buying a first car. I mean, all of that stuff. They would be loading up on that stuff. But you know, they can't because there's not enough of them. And but yeah, and so what we're creating here is a system of quite real generational tension, because there is money being transferred to people who are fairly wealthy, and workers are facing, you know, higher taxes and lower asset ownership. You know, they're not getting their homes, and the pensioners are getting guaranteed real growth with two opportunities for a bonanza bonus. And that bonanza bonus will normally come over the period of a three-year bonanza, because what you'll typically see is 18 months of high inflation followed by 18 months of high wage growth. So you know, you're going to get at least 2.5%, and then every so often you're going to get a 3 or 4 year period where it just rockets up. The government isn't actually legally bound to the triple lock. I mean, not America. We don't, when we do these things, you know, somebody just stands up in Parliament and announces it. We don't write everything into law with an act of Congress the way the Americans do. I mean, the Americans are in a horrible mess when they want to sort out their fiscal situation, because they've written it all into law, which is a bit silly. Don't do that. Well, I suppose they pass it as bills, don't they? Pass budget bills. Yeah, we just do a budget and then we vote on the budget. Are you happy with the budget, yes or no? And if they say no, then you're effectively kicked out of government, because if you can't pass a budget, you know, what can you do? Pension triple lock isn't just generous, you know, it's structurally anti-cyclical in the wrong direction. When workers are stressed, pension goes up quite a lot. When workers get some relief, which of course imposes more cost on businesses, you know, the employers are squeezed. So it's either workers getting squeezed or employers getting squeezed, and pensioners are just like, brilliant, here for that. They're getting all of that. Yes, so there's that. Current pension. So there's actually two pension schemes that are sort of live at the moment. There's the pre-2016 one, which was a little bit more complicated. And if you are on that one, if you retired before 2016, you are getting £184.90 from your pension. But it's not quite as easy as that, because you probably had a secondary state pension, another scheme on it, and that's a bit more variable. So I won't guess the numbers. But the new pension, if you retired after 2016, you're getting £241.30 a week, which translates into £12,548,000 a year. So it's so £12,500 a year you're getting, £250 odd a week in your state pension if you retired after 2016. And there are some rules with it. So you basically need a minimum of 10 years work to get anything at all, and you need to get the full pension, the full 241.80, you need to have paid in your national insurance for 35 years, which isn't that difficult to do. I think, how old am I now? I've been working for 26 years. I think I've got all my years. I must have. So I only need to do 9 more. God. 9 more years in Swindon. Maybe I can find something else to do. Maybe I'll just work around the shops or something in Winchester. But anyway, you get your 35 years of national insurance contributions, and then you get the full state. Well, I mean, I won't get a full state pension anyway, because it's all going bust long before I retire. I'm a young Gen X, or the youngest Gen X that you can get. I'm the last year. So the chances of me getting any of this, I think, is absolutely remote, especially if we carry on with this. I mean, it's just going to bloody implode, as I'll get to with the numbers later. And I think it's a linear arrangement between the number of, as soon as you cross the threshold of 10 on your way to 35, it's just a linear arrangement. So you get 1/25th of the total for every year over 10, if that makes sense. That should make sense. So structurally, what is it? I mean, ultimately, what is this line item on the government's P&L? It is a benefit. It's a pay-as-you-go system, funded by the current workers' national insurance. A lot of the time, when people speak about this, when retirees speak about it, they say, I've been paying in for however many years, 40 years, they'd say, and now I'm taking it out. Well, no, you're not, because what that conjures up is the illusion that they were paying into a big sovereign pot, sovereign wealth fund of some sort, a big pot, and it was a little ring, and it was all ring marked, and it was, you know, Gladys Smith here, here's a little pot, and she's been filling it up all those years, and all she's going to do now is draw it back down again. Not how it works in the slightest. Gladys was paying for Edna, whatever a classic Greatest Generation name would be. So Edna. So Gladys is paying for Edna, and then when Gladys retires, she's getting paid for by current workers paying their national insurance. There is no pot at all. So it is a benefit. It's part of the welfare system. They get very upset when you tell them that, but it is part of the welfare system.
If you enjoyed that content, and of course you did because you are a smart person, then why don't you go over to lotuseaters.com where you can watch the whole episode for as little as £5 a month, which really is not much money at all, and you get loads of really good content.